everyone, and welcome to Better Done Than Perfect podcast for SaaS founders and product people. Today, our awesome guest is Chris Silvestri, and we're going to talk about conversion copywriting for SaaS. Chris is an awesome conversion copywriter who designs, and I'm delighted to have a person in here who can do both. This show is brought to you by UserList, the best tool for sending onboarding emails and segmenting your SaaS users. To follow the best practices, download our free printable email planning worksheets at userlist.com/worksheets. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Jane. Thank you for having me. It's awesome.
We're excited. Before we dive into the main topic, could you give us a brief primer on yourself, your background story, and for the full picture, we're also going to have your twin brother in the next episode, if stars align as we plan. So, <Yeah. laughs> an interesting coincidence.
Yeah. Back-to-back twins. Okay, so yeah, a bit about me. So in my old life, I was a software engineer, which has nothing to do with what I do now. But basically, the thing is, I wanted to tour with my band a lot more. So I started learning conversion copywriting on the side. And that's when in 2016, I basically jumped ship, moved to the UK, and started working on as a conversion copywriter full time. And then I worked for 2 years at an agency, a branding design agency, where I did user experience design. And then now, last year, 2021, I basically got back on my own, and I'm trying to now integrate both copywriting and user experience design into what I do, which is conversion alchemy, where I help SaaS companies and e-commerce companies, usually around 6-7 figures, convert more of their visitors into customers.
So you have both conversion copywriting and design goes second in your bio. How did you decide to go into design? Was it the necessity to make these words actually like live in the wireframes and the landing pages?
Yeah, it happened kind of serendipitously, actually. So at the beginning, I was attracted by copywriting because of the whole psychology aspect of it, the decision-making, understanding how people think. It was very fascinating, so I started learning, and that's the way that I got into copywriting. But for user experience, I actually, like the founder of the agency where I worked at, Queen Zeta, she basically saw something in me, apparently, when I showed her some wireframes that I was doing for my copywriting clients. And that's when she thought, oh, yeah, I need a guy like you for doing UX at my agency. So since I was still learning, it was my beginning years, I saw the opportunity of learning another skill and kind of adding to my talent stack, if that's how you call it. And yeah, I actually saw the research aspects of both copywriting and UX have a lot of commonalities, a lot of common ways of researching your audience. And I thought that like learning UX would be a great way for getting deeper into both psychology, but also, yeah, how people make decisions, how they actually buy and how they use products and websites. So yeah, I'm really like a learning addict most of the time. So any opportunity for learning for me, it's great. And that's how I actually decide usually where to take my career.
I couldn't agree more. In my past consulting work, it's all about using words the right way, like design and copywriting. They're very, very, not copywriting, maybe like UX copywriting especially. They go so much hand in hand, but I can't imagine. I have the luxury of knowing how to do both, but it's a pity that so many designers are not introduced into the copywriting world.
Yeah. And I would say, like, it's the opposite. Like, a lot of copywriters as well don't, like, they mostly focus on words, which is great. But at the same time, especially if you're in SaaS, you're writing and presenting, like, a software product, right? So the intersection between the front end of the website and the back end, the actual product, if you don't create, like, a cohesive experience between the two, that's where there's a gap and people can feel it. So I think I actually like to think about it as like a world building. A lot of companies, like a good example that I think about a lot and I like, if you look at the website, I think it's great. It's ClickUp. They are huge, but and they're kind of englobating a lot of the productivity software out there. And if you look at the website and product, that's a good example of a cohesive experience between the marketing side and the product side. And yeah, a lot of designers think of copy as UX copy most of the times, which is the copy inside the product. But having an eye, keeping an eye for the actual marketing and sales copy on the front end is usually really effective, I think.
Tell us more about the work you do with SaaS companies, because that's your target audience as a consultant. What's the most popular service? What sells well?
Well, usually it's the custom projects. And the custom projects are, yeah, full-on conversion copywriting projects, which usually are divided in three phases, which is the research, and then the writing and wireframing, and finally some validation and testing. And each project is custom, as in, like, we go through a discovery phase where we decide what to target, what's the goal of the project, and how to improve what's currently available. Usually the clients that go for the custom project, and my target clients are small teams that have product market fit, but they kind of are stuck in their current situation. They can't really grow more. And the main issue they have is that they don't really understand their customers, because they either didn't do the research so far, so they've been patching up their websites with what they thought was working, or their own idea of what the product does to their for their customers. So yeah, they don't really have any actual data on it, and they need someone, an external perspective, to collect the data and put everything together. Another thing that I usually do that's quite helpful, I think, it's the usability testing, which is a great, super quick way to get real world data on how a website could be improved. Basically, I think user testing, even if you don't have the exact target audience, which, yes, can be tricky for B2B niche companies, but even if you don't have the exact target audience, you can really get an understanding of how people consume the copy on your website, how they flow, if they find all the information that they need. So that's a really great, quick way to get some data, and another project that my clients often go for.
When we talk about website conversions for SaaS, I'm particularly curious about a few things that involve copywriting. So one is improving landing pages, and probably meaning those that you drive traffic from ads, for example. And the other is driving SEO traffic from your blog. And I'm very curious, like, let's start maybe with the landing pages. How does your work go when you have a project like that? What are the typical problems?
So for landing pages, usually the main problem is understanding who the exact customers who are going to consume the landing page are. So what I do for my clients is usually understanding the top 2-3 personas that they have. And when I talk about personas, I don't mean the most common way of thinking about personas, which is demographics, but it's mostly about the psychographics. So understanding how they think, how they make decisions, what they need to see, and in what kind of sequence. That's and you can get a lot of those insights with, as I mentioned, usability testing or running customer interviews, for example, or surveys. Mostly qualitative data rather than quantitative data. So for a landing page, it's important to obviously focus on one persona, and understanding for a SaaS as well, B2B, it's important to understand who is the persona who actually signs the check, or who is the persona who's using the product, or who's the persona who manages the team. Because those are usually the three fundamental differentiators between the buyer personas that you can have. And once you know who you're targeting, it's much, much easier to figure out how to speak to them and what they need to see.
So we have three personas within the same company, but it's very unclear who should be reading the page and who we should be writing this for. And as we know, trying to target all three is kind of a exercise in being vague, which never results in a good thing.
So, like, I mean, one classic way that a lot of companies go about doing this is they have solutions pages that you can use to target each persona differently, with their own pain points, their own motivations for getting the product. But I think a very important way, if you have like one page, for example, I think it's really important to have different sections, maybe each section speaking to or focusing on one of those personas in particular. And also, I think it's important to understand how people consume the content. So if you see on user recordings, for example, Hotjar, you see usually how people scroll through a page. Or in user testing, you can see how what they focus on, what they read. Once you know kind of the flow that they use to go through a page and what they focus on, it's also like a good way of going about this is having different sections that speak to each persona. And for example, you can have a subhead that speaks to the check signer, for example. You can have the paragraph that focuses more on the daily user. But you can only do that once you know who the three personas are and also which part of the page usually they are going to focus on.
Do you usually get to write copy for the ads themselves that would, you know, be cohesive with the landing page? Or do they give you ad copy and then you would extrapolate it into the landing page, for example?
No, yeah, usually the ad copy is already done. I rarely focus on ad copy. So I try to match the two, but a lot of times it's my work and the research behind it that informs the ad copy, so the other way around. And then the client goes back and revisits the ad copy to match the landing page.
Have there been any spectacular outcomes that helped your clients achieve extraordinary results? Not like boring routine work when you have the expected predictable conversion rates, like the majority of SaaS work we do, you know, is boring and average, but maybe some exceptional things you've been able to accomplish in this conversion field.
I don't have the actual results yet because it's quite a recent project. But with this client, they are in the Instagram services, right? So they sell Instagram services. Like, they have a network of people basically and sell like likes, comments, all that stuff, which is it's kind of a scammy field, a scammy market. And and they are trying to differentiate from other providers who are not like really legit and honest. And a thing that we actually did there, which I don't know if a lot of conversion copywriters do, but we basically changed the entire pricing structure because we realized from the research that wasn't really what customers needed. And it was also confusing. For example, they used to have like five different pricing tiers divided into three types of plans, right? So 3x5 is like 15 different tiers. And that was way too much. And a lot of customers, when getting on the pricing page, they didn't really know what they could choose, what was best for them. So what we did with the research was simplifying all of that. And we kept three tiers for each plan. We also made the customization, because they had like a completely customizable plan. So we made that much more visible because people didn't understand that they could customize the plan. So a lot of this, as you can see, it's like a mix of understanding visual hierarchy design and injecting it with the insights that you get from researching customers and copywriting, basically.
Can you tell us more about the tools you use for testing the pages, analytics, probably heat maps, as you mentioned, reader behavior in the page? And also maybe a few moments later, we can focus on the usability testing itself, which I imagine is a separate project, not just a tool.
Tools, I use Hotjar a lot because it basically you can do website surveys, which surprisingly get a lot of responses, contrary to what most people think. They think, a website survey, a pop-up, usually it's annoying. But I think if you can really create like simple, short questions, you can get a lot of insights. And then you can do heat maps, so click maps, attention maps, and also user recordings. I usually watch at least 100 user recordings to understand the patterns there. And sometimes, if Hotjar doesn't work, a good alternative is SmartLook that I've been using, which is pretty similar. As far as analytics, yeah, I mostly use Google Analytics, but I don't jump into it like randomly. I first get an idea of what works and what doesn't work, and then I have an hypothesis and I try to validate it with Google Analytics and other tools. But yeah, those, nothing fancy. Those are the main tools that I use. And usability testing, there's a few platforms that we can talk about.
Do you use heat maps a lot? And how do you use them for analyzing how effective your work is?
Yeah. Heat maps, especially useful. And they usually are divided in three types. So you have click maps. You can see where people click. You have attention maps. So it basically where the mouse scrolls. So it tells you what people pay attention to, but also what people have a hard time understand, because they usually, when you usually don't understand a piece of copy, for example, you tend to highlight it a lot with the mouse. That's a natural thing. It happens. And then you have scroll maps, which tell you how far down the page people scroll. And it's good to understand if you have like false bottoms, for example, the design makes you think that the page is finished while you have more content when you scroll. So yeah, combining all of those with the user recordings, you start seeing patterns, things that work, things that don't. For example, if you see a lot of people clicking on an element of the page that's not clickable, you know that you might make it clickable so they can go and navigate to another section to get more information. As I mentioned, people highlighting text might mean that it's confusing. And also with the scroll maps, you can see if people find a piece of content boring and they don't scroll, or if your goal is to have them click right away, if you can see if they do it, or if they tend to scroll and lose some time on the page. So yeah, it's a lot of great insights there.
Do you have any advice on what type of landing page design works best these days in terms of like heavily illustrated or long form sales copy, or I don't know, short and actionable, focused on driving the sign up? What's hot for what performs?
Yeah, I'm actually pretty against templates or formulas, but and I think the most important thing is understanding first, obviously, the awareness level of your audience. So, how much do they know and how much they need to know, and that usually dictates the length of the page. And also, yeah, the level of sophistication of the audience. So that's basically how much do they know about the product and the market. And that usually tells you whether they need more of like a bullet point structure, or if they need something more conversational, explaining the high level of the product, and also if they're ready to click right away. So do you need a button on the in the above the fold section? That's usually dictated by these two characteristics. So are they ready? Are you telling them everything they need to know right away on the top of the page, or do they need to scroll down and see more? So usually I try to understand those two with the research, and I craft the landing page based on that. But if I would have to pick a template or something that works, especially for SaaS, I think it's very important to actually use screenshots of the product in-app. And also on the landing page, tell people not really the product, but how the whole process of signing up and using the product works, and make it skimmable, like scannable and easy to read on the page. So like a 1, 2, 3 step section where you tell them how everything works, because another important factor I think is setting the right expectations. before people click. Because if you don't and they click, then you might lose them. So it's always important to set both the context and the expectations for users.
Managing expectations definitely a super, super important one. And it's especially important when you involve, you know, billing at some stage. So definitely so. Let's talk about converting your blog traffic to any sort of signups, probably email list signups. What do you have to say on that?
Yeah, when it comes to converting blog traffic, I think it's very important to, as I was mentioning, seeing how people consume the content. So using heat maps, it's a great way of understanding how they consume content and seeing if there are any stumbling blocks that you see on the content. And also, obviously, trying to integrate a call to action that's compelling and that's relevant to the content that they are seeing. But also, I think it's important to give them options. So maybe not having one single call to action that takes them to the sign up, but taking them through a journey, through an experience on the site. So maybe having a secondary call to action that takes them to the How It Works page or to the FAQ if the article is related to something more technical or a question, a specific question that they might have. So tailoring the call to action to the content that they are consuming, I think it's important. Yeah, making the content very easy to read and skim through so that they don't lose motivation. Because it's important to have them keep the motivation throughout the whole article, because if they lose it by the end, or if they're overwhelmed, if they don't really engage with it, that's when you actually lose people, and obviously they don't even have a chance to see the rest of the website.
What do you say of exit intent pop-ups and other things like that, or maybe entry point pop-ups when you see a pop-up instead of content, which is horrible, but probably converts.
Yeah. A lot of those convert. And I can tell you, because with my e-commerce clients, that's super frequent. And the thing that I hate, I can tell you it doesn't work. It's when you use like 3 or 4 pop-ups at the same time in the first 5 seconds of the experience.
Yeah.
And I've seen those Wheel of Fortunes that you have to click to win something.
Oh, yeah.
Blah, blah. Oh, my God. But yeah, they definitely work if you use them in a smart way. So obviously going into Google Analytics, checking the average time on page. And I usually try to set pop-ups for the last 70 to 80% of the time someone is on the page. So they have time to consume the actual content and get an idea for what's presented to them. And the same thing with like exit intent. Yeah, I would say to customize those as well, make them very targeted and very specific if you know what people are looking for on the page, and also give them a call to action that's related to what they are looking for. And for that, I would say it's important especially to understand where people are coming from on the website. Every source of traffic, I think it's different, and you have to understand how the whole journey evolves and not give a one solution to everybody.
Are there any SaaS companies that do a terrific design job with their blogs, meaning designing the layout of what they present and those call to action and everything like that?
Mm-hmm. As I was mentioning when I was talking about world building, I think two companies that do it very well are one, ClickUp, that I mentioned. Yeah, if you look at their blog, it's really good. And also the call to action, the design and everything is very well laid out and effective, I think. Another company is, I think it's Balsamiq, which is, I think it's quite the opposite.
Oh.
It's quite the opposite in the way that they are quite like a small company, and they want to remain small. But at the same time, they create a very cool environment when you're on the site, both between their normal website and also the academy website. It's like a separate educational area of their own website. But everything in the experience when you go on their website, and also when you read their emails, it's cohesive. And I think that's very important to keep in mind. If you can create a cohesive experience that feels like you're speaking with the same brand everywhere, I think that's very important to keep in mind.
Oh, yes. I love that you mentioned Balsamiq. It's we have a long-standing relationship with them. Paldi is doing a great job. And I don't think they're as small as they might want to look like. I mean, they've been out for ages. And they struck a product market fit pretty early. So their growth has been impressive over years.
Yeah, they don't do a lot of marketing. So it's not that they are like super growth focused, but they are focused on longevity and having a great product, which I think is great.
Yeah, and they definitely focus on having great human relationships with team, customer, contractors, anybody. It's amazing. Really great. Yeah. As we're wrapping up today's episode, what are top recommendations? One do and one don't when it comes to SaaS conversion copywriting?
Yeah, so I'm starting with the don't. The first don't that comes to mind is don't launch a redesign project without first writing the copy or thinking about the copy and strategy behind it, which is what I'm doing currently with a client. So I have to kind of patch up things after the website new design is already live. So I would always start, if you have to pivot or change your strategy, always start with researching your audience first and writing the copy and laying it out, and then create a good design, a good branding around everything that you found. Because what I see is the copy gives you a lot of insights, not only into how to sell people, but how to strategize and think about your product strategy, the pricing, everything around it. So it's important to start with that first. As far as I do, I would say, well, I kind of actually talked about it, but yeah, it's basically, I would recommend usability testing to most SaaS if they don't do it, not only for the product side, so the UI and design of the product and usability of the product, but also for the usability of the site. So how people consume the content on the of their website, what are their stumbling blocks, the objections that people might have, what's broken. You can quickly see it with just 5 users on a website. That usually gives you around 85% of the issues. And you can get the results in 1 week instead of spending weeks and weeks on other research methods. So yeah, I would recommend it.
You mentioned that you're a fan of learning. So what are your favorite learning resources in this industry that you would recommend to our listeners?
I'm actually subscribing to BIMERT Institute, but they also have a lot of free articles, good research that's based on thousands of usability studies, heat maps, and everything. So that's a very good resource. Copy Hackers, obviously, that's what most conversion copywriters recommend. But another one that I think is not as well known, it's called MacLabs Institute, and they have a lot of great insights, methodology for understanding user experience and copy as well.
Awesome. We'll make a note in our show notes. And swiftly transitioning into your resources, you have an amazing daily newsletter, which sounds super scary to me. Tell us more.
So it's an experiment that I'm trying out. So basically I'm writing from Monday to Friday. It's a super quick 200-300 word email that I send out every day, which I called Conversion Alchemy Journal. And you can think about it as like my daily journal of the thoughts that ramble in my mind and crazy ideas that I get. So yeah, I think it's an interesting look into the mind of a copywriter or someone in the industry. So if you are in SaaS, I think it might be quite interesting to give you spark some ideas.
Give us an example. What was one of the past ones that you want to share?
Well, this morning, I don't know if you know, but I see something on the news. So this morning, I've written about Will Smith slapping Chris Rock at the Oscars, and that kind of sparked some ideas on telling your narrative first before others do it for you, and how kind of like we are like one or two person removed from from people you might want to know, and how important it is to curate your own brand to avoid mess coming out of it. So yeah, that's kind of an example of a random idea that it turned into kind of a story and a lesson.
Are you not afraid of getting that on that content treadmill? How are you finding the writing experience so far?
Yeah, so I before starting it out, I actually wanted to make sure that I enjoyed it. So I did the first 30 plus issues just for myself, just writing them every day. And I was noting, I was taking note of the time that I was taking to write one, which is usually like 10, 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I also gave myself some constraints. So I can't do any research. I just have to write whatever I have in my mind, or also anything that I want to think deeply about. And I think this is a good, it's a good way of reserving some time to actually think deeper about stuff, instead of just copy what other people do, or just saying something that you already read somewhere else. If you can't do any research, it basically leaves you with the thoughts that you have in your mind, and you just have to try and dig deeper into what you think, which I think is a good exercise. So yeah, once I did the first 30 plus, I said, okay, let's launch it. I saw that I was enjoying it. I saw that it was useful. Even if I was writing it for nobody, for just myself, it would be a good investment of my time. So I said, let's try it.
Yeah, actually, any switch from consuming to creating is a good dynamic for your mind. So
yeah.
You are taking that to the extreme, I guess. Well, thank you so much for joining today, for the awesome advice. And good luck with your newsletter and good luck with your consulting.
All right. Thank you very much for having me. It's been great.
Thank you, Chris. Have a wonderful rest of your week. Thanks for listening. If you found the episode useful, please spread the word about this new show on Twitter, mentioning UserList, or leave us a review on iTunes.